Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman, joined by Corey Curtis from News 2 for his weekly visit to the show. Parker Kelly with us. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Fun show for you today. We'll be joined by James Boyd, Colts writer for The Athletic, coming up at 9:30. Plenty of Titans talk and much more. Corey, how's it going? Thanks for coming in.
I am a delight.
I know you were watching the NFC game last
yep.
night.
Yep.
Nashville SC advancing to the U.S. Open Cup final. They will play, is it Minnesota or...
The winner of Minnesota-Austin tonight.
Right.
Yes.
And is that game next week?
No, it'll be October 1st.
Oh, okay. So coming up in a couple weeks. So.
Yeah, Minnesota-Austin is tonight.
Right,
and
yes.
then the winners play October 1st, and that'll be either be at Minnesota
right.
or Austin. They will not be home, and that was just selected by random draw.
Right.
But last night was a spectacular performance. Sam Surridge, another hat trick. I mean, I think he's up around 26 goals in 32
Crazy.
Matches. He's hitting superstar status in the U.S. right before our eyes. And I know not everybody's soccer guy, but not everybody's football guy or not everybody's hockey guy. You still have to appreciate when you're seeing greatness, and
right.
he's turning in a great season.
Yeah, we just watched SportsCenter Top 10 was playing behind us in the studio. His final goal was number 5
yep,
on there.
It was.
And it probably
was,
could have been higher.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty. I mean, I can't sit here and draw it up for you, but to jump in midair and kind of cradle the ball with the inside of your foot and just in midair pop it over the goalie's head, they make it look so easy.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, they call it the beautiful game, but that's truly, and I've heard the coaches say this, what great players do is make the incredibly hard look incredibly easy. And he made an incredibly hard play look like he could do it 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, the soccer players at that level, they do things that are so difficult, and it does impress me every time. It's soccer and hockey are the two sports that I look at, and I'm like, I don't know how you're doing that.
Yeah.
Where, 'cause like, my foot-eye coordination is not good enough for soccer, and like the fact that hockey players do that on skates too, like it's very impressive. And Nashville SC, big win last night.
Yeah, really. I mean, they want to win a trophy. You know, they make this argument that they want to be the first team in state to win a trophy, and yes, technically, but the U.S. Open Cup is not winning the MLS championship,
right?
And so it's not the same as winning the Super Bowl or winning the Stanley Cup. You need to win the MLS Cup if you're going to say you've got the first championship. Because, you know, the Preds could say we were Western Conference champions.
Yep.
And the Titans could say we were AFC champions and claim a championship. All right? There's banners up at Bridgestone Arena for everything for that.
Yeah.
All right? So while I think it would be awesome to have that trophy, and I am not disparaging that at all, it's apples and oranges.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
This would, I guess it would be kind of the equivalent of in the NBA, the in-season
yeah.
tournament, kind
yeah.
of like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're excited to win it.
I don't think there's any contracts written where you get a bonus if you win the in-season tournament.
Yes. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So,
hey, LeBron, you get an extra,
yeah.
I know you make $58 million a year, but you're going to get an extra million if you can win that in-season tournament.
Man. Well, I know there is a financial reward for the team who does win it.
Yes.
I don't know exactly what the number is, but right. Like, it's not written into contracts of, like,
performance hey, on in-season tournament.
Giannis,
yeah.
we're gonna give you this huge incentive if you win
yeah.
the...
And like, when LeBron James or Giannis goes into the Basketball Hall of Fame, they're not going to say, you know, three-time NBA champion... Four-time in-season tournament title holder.
Right.
That will not be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, not to take anything away from Nashville SC. It would be awesome to see them win that championship.
Absolutely.
But, right, it is not winning the MLS.
No, nope. And if they really want those flowers, they've got to win the MLS Cup. But, you know, winning this one is a really good start. It's, you know, playing these do-or-die games is great experience. They were clearly the better team last night. They beat
yeah.
Philadelphia for the third time. Philadelphia's first in the Eastern Conference. First.
Yep.
And they are 3-0 against them this year. So, and they had just gone through a rough stretch where they'd lost, I think, 4 or 5 matches. So to go out and play that well And I mean, look, they took it to Philly all night last night. And by the end of the game, all Philly wanted to do was fight. They could Philly could have gotten like a red card in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they didn't get and they didn't make that call. And then they could have gotten another red card later. Didn't get that call. Eddie Tagseth got, you know, bloodied big time. Took an elbow to the eye. It looked like they were in Philly.
And Nashville, only four games left in the MLS regular season. It's coming up quick. They are currently fourth in the Eastern Conference, so lots to look forward to with the boys in gold. And again, big win last night. U.S. Open Cup final coming up on October 1st. Let's transition to the Titans here, Corey.
Yep.
It was another loss on Sunday, 33-19 to the Rams, and the Titans are 0-2. Mm-hmm. But as we've discussed since you started coming on the show, the expectation was the Titans were going to be 0-2 after two games.
Exactly right.
Those are two playoff teams that they faced. I think the way they lost the Broncos game disappointed a lot of people because they had the opportunities to win it.
I think the in-game gaffes.
Right.
And look, there's understandable outrage and upsetness with some of that stuff. I get it. I still can't believe what they did before halftime.
Right.
But I think that diminishes the fact that they played that game a lot closer than most fans thought they would
for sure
going in. And so, you know, you have to take the positives with the negatives, okay? You have to say, gosh, this is horrible. I can't believe they did this. But, you know, I thought they were going to lose that game by two touchdowns. And they had the ball twice with a chance to tie the game late. And then, you know, you look at the Rams, who are a Super Bowl contending team. I mean, if they stay healthy, that's constructed, they're really good. They're really good. And I went and watched that game again on Wednesday. I watched it again on Monday night. And, you know, look, the Rams are clearly the better team. You would expect the Rams to clearly be the better team. But the Titans are winning that game 16-13 with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. And then the defense collapses. That's not okay. And I know yesterday Denard Wilson talked about competitive endurance.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if it's endurance or focus, but that drive, they clearly let up. And then your very next offensive drive, you fumble on the doorstep and they score. And the game's over. That's how quickly it can turn in the NFL. And look, the better team won both those games. The only point I'm making is everybody's talking about this like they got their doors blown off for four quarters. And that's not the case. That's not the case. They've been competitive. They've been in these games. They should have been winning both of them at halftime. And saying should have been is a problem in itself.
Right.
Because it means you did something not to.
Yep.
And that's a problem in itself. But they have been competitive with both of these teams for probably seven of eight quarters. And if you're looking for positives, and also if you're just looking to be realistic about it, that's reality. Do they need to be better? Hell yes. Of course they do. But they also could have last year when they played these teams, they lost 42-10.
Yes.
Okay. I saw Detroit. I saw Buffalo.
Washington.
Washington. Those games were not competitive. They got absolutely blistered in those games. And they didn't get blistered in these games. And is that supposed to be a victory? No. I think I'm just giving myself a reality check because I was just like, man, are they ever going to win a game? And look, they may not. They may not.
Right.
We don't know. But I don't think it's so bad where you're like, well, they can't play with anybody. Well,
no.
They played with these two teams for seven quarters.
I agree. I said yesterday on the show that I think they've played better than I expected them to through 2 weeks. Like, again, they got the ball back even after they gave up the touchdown to go down 20-16. You have the ball down by four with a chance to go answer, and Cam Ward makes a bad decision, holds the ball too long, fumbles. And from then on out, it was kind of game over. A couple plays later, that was when Snead gave up the touchdown to Devontae Adams on third down. And when you're down 27-16 against a team of that caliber, you're probably not coming back. But you're right. This is a team that has been competitive with two playoff teams through the first 2 weeks. Now you get a team in the Colts who they've looked good, but
haven't punted.
Right. Have not punted. First team in the Super Bowl era to not punt through their first two games. And they're 2-0. Should be 1-1 if it wasn't for Sean Payton.
It was a gift.
Right.
Look, making that call is a gift.
The Titans have had that before. Back in part of that 7-game losing streak in 2021, Jeffrey Simmons got called for leverage, allowed the Bengals to kneel it out.
Did you think that was leverage?
No.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying. To make that call on a 70-yard field goal that is the last play of the game.
Yeah.
All right, to say, you know what? The game's not over. We're going to let you kick it, and we're going to let you kick it 15 yards closer.
Yeah.
I mean, you better be darn sure that this was a blatant, blatant breaking of the rules.
You can see why they called it, but yeah, it wasn't clear and obvious, and you know, Sean Payton said he's like, if I could go back, I wouldn't have put the block call on. I'm like, yeah, maybe on a 60-yard field goal at the end of the game, you don't try and block it.
And so, you know, Brian Callahan's taking it in the shorts right now, and when you're 3-16, you do. But Sean Payton makes a horrible decision at the end of the Titans game that gives the Titans a chance to tie, and now makes another bad decision this week.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, but he's Sean Payton.
Right. He's got a Super Bowl ring to back it up at the very least.
But so he can get away with it right now. But imagine if Brian Callahan did that, because his results don't back it up. But I guess I'm just saying great coaches also make mistakes.
No, it is true. If Brian Callahan had made the same mistake, like Callahan's made his own mistakes, but if he had coached the Broncos or the Titans the way Sean Payton has coached the Broncos for 2 weeks, I think the calls for his job would be even louder than they are right now.
So, Jake, I've been on the show for, what, 2 months with you now?
Yeah, right around there.
You know that one of my favorite things to talk about is mitigating disaster.
Yep.
All right? And, you know, I think a big part of a quarterback's job is to mitigate disaster and negative plays. And I think part of being a coach, and this goes to Callahan in Denver, mitigating disaster, and I think he did a really good job of that this week after the interception when he ran the ball and got the field goal. I know everybody wanted him to go for the touchdown, but he has seen it go wrong.
Oh, for sure.
And he was like, I don't trust my team. I mean, he didn't say this. This is my observation. I don't trust my team to not blow this, okay? So we're going to run the ball. I know Joey Sly is going to knock it through, and we're going to get our 3 points. And I think that was 100% the right decision.
I think I could have used maybe one aggressive play call, but I also understand why he did it, because it's just like after last week and the reaction to what he did at the end of the half in Denver, it makes sense that he just decided, you know, let's pack it up, take our three, and get into the locker room.
All right, have you ever seen like a 1-year-old with their birthday cake?
I'm sure I have, but I can't.
It's called a smash cake for a reason. Okay, so the next, like, if you had another birthday cake, you know, pretty birthday cake.
Yeah.
Because you make a smash cake and then a birthday cake. So if you gave him the smash cake and he did what they do to smash cakes, and then you've got the pretty birthday cake, are you going to leave him alone in the room with the pretty cake after that?
No, probably not.
No, why? Because you learned that he's going to destroy that damn thing.
Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah. That one was the smash cake already happened.
Yeah.
All right. We were on to the pretty birthday cake. Okay. And he made the right decision. People can hate me. You can hate me all you want. Okay. They got 3 points. They had the lead. Boom.
Right. It's a situation for Brian Callahan. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yes.
It's like you take the points and people are going to say you weren't aggressive enough.
If they win that game by 3 points,
right?
People are like, oh, that was he was so smart to do that.
He was a genius.
Blah, 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 blah. But you lose the game and no, it doesn't happen. And the other thing is Cam Ward's not there yet.
Yeah.
We like Cam Ward, all right? And we see good things from Cam Ward, but he's not Joe Burrow yet. He's not Josh Allen yet. He's not Lamar Jackson yet. You give those guys that leeway. This kid's 2 games into his NFL career. Let him work some stuff out. Then let him have a little bit more say, take a few chances. You know, don't put him in position to screw things up because he's trying to make a play.
Yeah.
All right? You know, because the good ones know it's not there. I'm chucking it into the stands. All right? I mean, you have to accept second down sometimes. And you don't have to put him in that position. And you don't have to put your offensive line in position to really screw things up as well.
That is true. Without J.C. Latham out there as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jake Lyman joined by Corey Curtis from News 2 for the full show today. Again, James Boyd from The Athletic, who writes about the Colts, will join us at 9:30. We'll talk a little bit about Titans-Colts coming up next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Back-to-back days with Go Cubs Go.
Hey, I had to pay homage to Corey Curtis.
1984.
Cubs are in the driver's seat for the top wild card, right?
Yeah, like they are, because, I mean, the Brewers went on that ungodly run.
Yeah.
And at that point, you throw up your hands and you say, hey, congratulations, you win the division, and you play for the playoffs, and you say, we'll go get them in the postseason. And that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, and I'm not going to get on a huge Cubs rant, but with what they've lost in the pitching staff this season to be where they are right now, I think is pretty remarkable. And it actually gives you hope. Now they've got to sign Kyle Tucker to a contract extension.
Yeah.
And this ownership group has not shown a lot of interest in paying to keep good players around. And so, you know, he's clearly a difference maker for them.
Yeah.
They need to pay him. And they're going to have to pay Pete Crow Armstrong at some point too. But you know what? They've got the money. All right. You know what they are right now? They are Heath Ledger as the Joker in Batman, all right, in Dark Knight Rises, and that he is sitting on that mountain of Bob money.
I love that comparison right there. That's awesome. Yeah.
That is Cubs ownership.
And yeah.
And then they're looking at players going, are we going to pay any of these guys? And they're looking at their mountain of money going,
nah.
Are they still coming to the game anyway? Good luck in San Diego.
Yeah, and speaking of San Diego, likely the Cubs' first-round matchup in the playoffs.
Okay.
Cubs-Padres and Mets-Dodgers on the other side. And we'll have...
I'd rather play... I don't want to play the Dodgers, regardless of whatever struggles they've had.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have the Padres or the Mets. I'd probably rather have the Mets most.
Those are going to be two good series. And speaking of the Mets, Teron Davenport will be on tomorrow. We'll have to get his thoughts on his Mets with two
Ooh,
weeks
I'd love
to go.
Me and Teron to have a head-to-head series.
Yeah, yeah. That is true. If we could get Mets Cubs.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because like the Bears colors are navy and orange, but it looks so much better than the hideous blue orange of the Mets. Sorry, Teron. it's not attractive. It's not attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. As somebody who grew up hating the University of Virginia, blue and orange, not my favorite colors.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
How
do you hate Virginia? What have they ever done to anyone?
I mean, I've been a Virginia Tech fan since I was 2 years old. I was brainwashed into hating the Wahoos.
I covered one Virginia game when I was working in Virginia for a year.
Really?
And I got into a fight with Al Groh.
Really? Al Groh.
One game.
Yeah.
And I'm in the post game with him, and we get in a fight.
That's so funny.
And people are looking at me. They didn't know who I was. I was working in Norfolk for a year. And I went up to the game, and he coached a horrible game. And I was like, what were you doing? And he got all upset with me. And I'm like reading the stat. I'm like, well, this is what this guy did.
Right.
You don't know anything about this football team. I go, well, I know they lost today.
Yeah. UVA has not had a whole lot of great head coaches in the last 25 years.
John Glennon, big UVA guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I
feel bad for him.
I grew up like the Grinch, hating the Hoos. That was what I was brainwashed to be as a young child. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Going to be joined shortly by James Boyd, Colts writer from The Athletic. But first, let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ed from New Jersey is on the line wanting to talk
All
Titans.
Right.
Ed, good morning. What you got for us?
Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to talk about this roster, and I guess my question is when does it become a crutch or an excuse, you know, for a staff not to get the most out of that roster? And I look over at special teams, and I think we can all agree that Bones Fossil is getting the most out of his roster. Players who don't start, the back half of the roster, he's getting more out of than the rest of the staff. So do we think it's gone to – now, does that mean that the roster's better than we think it is, or is it Fossil just a better coach than the rest of the staff? So I struggle with, what, you know, isn't it the onus on the coaching staff to get the most out of the hand that you've been dealt? And maybe I'm jaded because we've come from a coaching staff, you know, we come from the Vrabel era, who routinely got, you know, blood out of a stone. So, I mean, I don't know, but I just don't see evidence that Callahan or even Wilson is getting the best out of what the hand that they've been dealt. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, Ed, I think that is a really, really good question and the right question to be asking right now. And, you know, so let's use special teams as an example, because Bones Fossil is a wonderful coach, and yep. Brian Callahan gets credit for hiring him. He made his team better yep. by hiring him. But what else did they do on special teams? They brought in Johnny Hecker. All right. Ryan Stonehouse, we love him. He's not on an NFL team right now. Why? Because it took him too long to get the ball off.
Right.
All right. They've got Johnny Hecker now. They've got Joey Sly now. Joey Sly is making kicks that Nick Folk couldn't make.
8 for 8 this year.
If Nick Folk was the Titans kicker this year, they would not have as many points as they have scored.
For sure.
Okay. So they've gotten two better players there. That has made them better. Okay. So personnel does matter there. Bryce Oliver is back. Okay. He was good at the end of last season covering punts and kicks. He's better now. So they did make him better last year, but, you know, John Fossil takes it to another level. But I think he's absolutely right. John Fossil getting the most out of his group. Now, his group did make a mistake. They did commit a penalty. It took 7 points off the board.
Yep.
Brian Callahan gets crucified for that. But, like we talked about with Sean Payton, John Fossil's bulk of his results are really good. And, you know, he truly does get the most out of his guys. And he teaches different than everyone else does. Okay? He's not just the same special teams coach. He barely teaches strategy, okay? He teaches one-on-one. This is you, this is your man. Beat this man. And he teaches guys how to defeat their man, all right? And they love playing for him. They love being in his meetings. And so you've got to elevate your guys. He is unquestionably, you know, elevating his guys. He's gotten some better guys too, and that matters. But you're right, because did the Titans get better guys on the offensive line? We think so, but they got to elevate them.
Yep.
And so, you know, results are one thing to argue. Elevating the guys on your roster is another, and that's probably the bigger concern. All right? Can these guys get more out of the players on the team? Because I always say the same thing, Jake. You're allowed to get better. We see it over and over again. You're allowed to get better. The Rams a couple years ago gutted the ship, but they got better. They brought in all new players on the offensive line and everything, and they still got better. And so I think Ed is making a very important point that the roster may not be good enough, but even if these guys are not good enough, we still need to see signs that they're getting better.
Yep, and I think the offensive line is the focal point there. When you have a coach like Bill Callahan, can he get these guys better? And
we're two games in. So it's a really small sample size. Who's gotten better? Can you definitively say anybody who's gotten better?
On the offensive line or just on the team?
On the team.
I think Skoronski, for yep, sure, Skoronski's stands out.
I think Io Manner, he walked in the door, has gotten better.
Yeah.
I think Cedric Gray has gotten better. I know he made some mistakes in this game, but I think, you know, he's a guy who's better than he was last year.
I'm trying to think through anybody else. It's just not a big group.
Yeah, I mean, Roger McCreary is playing
Roger McCreary's played well. I think L'Jarius Sneed looked solid, and we'll talk more about him later.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he was able to get through a game is all I'm really looking at. But, you know, I think we should be looking. I mean, it's like I said, it's only two games, so that's not a great big, you know, sample size. But they need more guys to show that they're better. You know, Chig and Gunner have got to get better at blocking. I mean, and if they don't get better at blocking, then it's the team's fault for not having somebody in there who can block, okay? Because at some point you have to recognize these guys can't do this, all right? And it's either they pick it up or we find somebody who can. You know, those are the hard choices to make, but you make them, all right? You know, hope is not a strategy. Okay.
That's a good point.
Hoping that they will eventually learn to block is not a strategy. Now, if you If you see signs and you think they're picking it up and that they're close, that's entirely something different. But just going out there and hoping, well, maybe this is the week Chig just buries that guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's something entirely different. They've got to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. When we come back, we'll be joined by James Boyd, Colts writer for The Athletic. We'll preview Colts and Titans. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. What a way to come back. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly. Spinning some theme music here as the Colts are in town this week, and we are pleased to be joined on our phone lines, driven by Wilson County Hyundai, by James Boyd, Colts writer for The Athletic. James, thanks for taking some time this morning. Excited for the game this weekend.
Absolutely. First road game of the year for the Colts, and always happy to make the trip over to Nashville.
Yes, excited to have you in the city this weekend.
Of course they're happy to make the trip. They usually win here.
Yes, that is a very good point.
That is also true.
usually ends well for the Colts coming down here to Nashville. James, good start for the Colts. Haven't punted in two games, 2-0. What's been the energy around that building and around the city for a team that, you know, I don't think heading into the season there was a ton of lofty expectations, but obviously have gotten off to a great start.
Absolutely. I've been eating crow the last couple of weeks because going into it, I was very skeptical. I know you brought up the whole they haven't punted in two games fact, which it is true. However, there's some context there. They had two failed fourth downs last week. So everyone keeps throwing that out there like they haven't, you know, had some failures on offense, but they have been few and far between for this team. I think the biggest surprise overall has to be the play of Daniel Jones. I mean, he has been lights out, and you look at his numbers, he's right up there with some of the best passers, best quarterbacks in the league. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, some of these leaderboards, they include Daniel Jones as well. And the biggest thing for me, you all, is that with the Daniel Jones redemption arc, you know, narrative, a lot of it, in my opinion, I thought would be stimulated from him being used as a runner as well, and kind of looking at what he did when he had success with the Giants. Well, that year they went to the playoffs with him, he ran the ball a lot, and it was very, like, you know, game manager type of quarterback play. He's out there winning games for them this year through the first two games, throwing the ball a lot and looking really good through the air.
Yeah, you mentioned Daniel Jones. I think, you know, obviously the quarterback competition with Anthony Richardson heading into the year. What has Daniel Jones shown over these first couple games and through training camp that allowed him to win that job and really put himself back in the conversation of being a quality quarterback in this league?
Well, first of all, you're calling him by the wrong name, because around here they call him Dimes. And so you hear the players, the people in the city, it's not Danny Dimes, it's not, you know, anything other than that, it's just Dimes. And so I think what I've noticed the most is really the consistency, and that's something that Shane Steichen really harped on all offseason, because we were asking him, like, hey, you know, we know that Daniel Jones can give you consistency, but he can't really give you, at least throughout his career, he hasn't given you a lot of explosive plays. Which one do you kind of prefer? The guy who can be consistent but not explosive, or the explosive guy who can be a little more erratic? And he made it clear early and often, we need consistency, and that's what they've given him at that position by, you know, starting Daniel Jones. So I think that's why Daniel Jones ultimately won the job over Anthony, and that's ultimately why he'll keep the job as well, because looking at these last two games, I cannot sit here and say, oh, my gosh, Anthony Richardson would have done the same things. Not necessarily. Throwing at this rate, at this clip, on time, on target, that is not something that Anthony has shown he can do through his first 2 years of his career, whereas Daniel Jones, he has shown the ability, when given a clean pocket, to get to the ball to his receivers, you know, the playmakers, let's do their thing. And so he has been playing some of the best of football of his career. And like I said, he is known as Dimes around here, you know, as far as these parts go.
When you look at this Colts team, I'm in a 180 of where I'm usually at. And when the season started, everybody was banging the Colts, and I thought, I said, if Dimes can be okay, I think this team can push for the playoffs. When you look at their roster, Michael Pittman was hurt last year. Michael Pittman is a good football player. Downs is a good football player. Jonathan Taylor is an excellent football player. And now you add Tyler Warren to the mix. There's not a lot of holes on that Colts offense. If the quarterback can just manage that and distribute that ball, that team should be pretty good. How much has Warren finished this thing out for them?
Absolutely. That is a great point you just made. I think Tyler Warren is already their number one option through the air. That's how he's treating him. The amount of versatile looks he's given them, whether he's lining up in the backfield, lining up in line as a traditional tight end, lining up on the outside as a wide receiver, you know, taking handoffs. I expect at some point this season we might even see a pass, you know, when you get down near the goal line, a Tim Tebow jump pass type of thing, because he's that versatile. And I think, to your point, the reason why I wasn't, like, super low on the Colts, I wasn't sold on them with Daniel Jones, don't get me wrong. But the reason why I didn't expect him to, like, bottom out is because they have hit on pretty much everything else except quarterback. Do they have a true number one receiver? Probably not. But they got a lot of B-list guys. And to me, if you have a quarterback who's kind of like a point guard who can get everyone the ball, that might be a little bit better than being so top-heavy with your skill position players where you have that drop-off when it comes to the other guys, you know, in those rooms. And so there isn't a whole lot of drop-off between Josh Downs, Tyler Warren, Michael Pittman Jr., even A.D. Mitchell getting on some of the action. So they have options there, and I think Tyler Warren has just enhanced it. They have not had a true tight end one in years, and absolutely you can see it through the first two games that this guy is turning into, or at least showing that he can be a star in this league.
Now, offensively for the Titans, we're back looking at the tackle position again right now with J.C. Latham out until we hear he's back in. Kwity Paye, DeForest Buckner, how much do you think those guys can take advantage of what the Titans are going to put there on the edge?
That's a great question. I do think that the pass rush has been a question mark for the Colts in the first two games. They haven't got as much pressure on the quarterback as they would like to, at least from their guys that they obviously paid a big money to get after the quarterback. I expect them to give Tennessee some challenges, but it's not something where I'm 100% sold on their pass rush. And I think the key, obviously, for Cam Moore would be to get the ball out quicker and hope that you can survive some of, you know, the looks you're going to get and really, you know, try to get some hits up off of you, because being hit that much, as much as he has, it's not going to create good habits for him. But one thing to keep in mind for the Titans is the availability of Laiatu Latu. This is the Colts' first-round pick from last year. He did not play last week because of a hamstring injury. And I wonder if they will keep him out this week as well, because you know how hamstrings can be. They can be finicky. They can be kind of nagging.
Yeah, you got to play the long game.
Give them, yeah, you want to be smart with that, and you don't want to, you know, re-aggravate that.
Talking with James Boyd, Colts writer for The Athletic. Last one for you, James. Jonathan Taylor this year, leading the NFL in rushing yards. He's been a playmaker, and I think people forget that he was considered a top two, top
three. Well, the Broncos forgot because they decided not to cover him in the flat. They just said, we'll just let him run free.
How have you seen him kind of return to form to being an elite running back in the NFL, and maybe remind some people how talented he really can be in the backfield for the Colts?
Absolutely. I think the last four or five games of last year, he really turned it on and was balling, and he picked up right where he left off. But what's been impressive to me, you all, is not just the running. We know he can run the ball, and he's been one of the more dynamic runners in the league the last 5 or 6 years, but his pass protection has been so much better through the first two games this year than probably any time I've seen him in my 4 years of covering him.
Well, he doesn't have to worry about that this week. I mean, the Titans don't rush the passer, so he'll be good.
Good point. But, you know, you never know. They want to get any hits on Daniel Jones, right? And then, to your point, his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, I think they've kind of exploited that even more this year and explored some of those options. And again, none of that really happens if you don't have the other, you know, players around him to take attention away from him. So he's a talented position group, and he is a stud. I mean, I joke with him all the time about some of his speed. He told us the other day, you know, when he's running at 22 miles an hour, it doesn't feel that fast. And I was like, yeah, for you, because you're an alien.
James, always appreciate you taking some time. Hope you travel safe and enjoy Nashville this weekend.
Much appreciated. Whenever you all need me, feel free to hit me up.
James Boyd covers the Colts for The Athletic. Really appreciate him coming on. Great stuff on Indianapolis as the Titans get ready for their first AFC South matchup this weekend. We'll react to what James had to say on the other side. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on Louisville with first pitch at 11:05 a.m., so coming up in just over an hour. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Jake Lyman joined by Corey Curtis from News 2, Parker Kelly on this Wednesday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Just had James Boyd from The Athletic on. He covers the Colts. Really good insights from James on what the Titans can expect with Indianapolis this week. And, you know, from what we may have expected at the beginning of the year with the Colts coming in here in week three, I think it's completely flipped on its head. This offense has been efficient. Daniel Jones has proven that he can be a distributor for, like you mentioned to James, a very talented group of weapons from Jonathan Taylor to Tyler Warren to that group of receivers that they've got.
Well, like I've said, I like to bang on the Colts because I feel like they're treated like royalty, even though they have not been relevant since 2014.
Yep.
Okay. Did you shave in 2014?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's been a while. And so the way the Colts get treated drives me nuts. But I thought going into this season, when I saw their draft, which I liked, okay, and I really liked Tyler Warren, and, you know, I knew Pittman was coming back healthy. And, you know, they've got offensive linemen. It may not be complete unit that they used to have, but they've got offensive linemen. They still got to, and I'm just looking, I'm like, if, and I thought, you know, look, I've never been a Daniel Jones guy. The contract with New York was terrible. At the same time, they had to have another plan from Anthony Richardson, who showed he was clearly not up to being a, yeah, at this stage of his life, okay, not up to being a starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, when you tap out of a game, that's bad. That's bad. And so when, you know, I just said if Daniel Jones can be average, like just like quarterback number 18, 20 in the NFL, I'm like, with the division that this team is in,
especially the way the Texans have looked through two weeks,
I'm like, this team can win, you know, 8, 9, 10 games maybe even, and that's exactly how they look. You know, look, we said they got a bit of a gift Sunday, but they were still right there.
Right.
I mean, they're still right there with the Broncos. And if you're the Colts, you're wondering, when does the glass slipper come off?
That's what I was literally about to say. When does Daniel Jones turn back into a pumpkin? Like, that's kind of what we're
waiting
on.
Maybe he doesn't.
But maybe he doesn't.
Maybe he's got good enough players around him finally where he can just be Daniel Jones and doesn't have to try to be something else.
Right. And we've seen that with a ton of quarterbacks lately. Baker Mayfield in Tampa,
Geno Smith,
Sam Darnold. Like, these guys are talented. There's a reason they were first-round picks. And Daniel Jones has led a team to the playoffs before. Mm-hmm. It's just about getting him in the right situation where you're not asking him to do too much.
Now, will it surprise me if he turns into a pumpkin? No, not horribly. Not horribly. But I'm willing to give him the opportunity to continue this run because I like a lot of the players around him. And, you know, I went over with you with the breaks, comparing Titans to Colts. Who's better?
Yeah.
And there's not a lot on the Titans side that's better.
Right. And, you know, we just went through the Titans draft classes again, that from 2020 to 2023, you have four players from those draft classes left.
Mm.
That needs to be the core of your team right now.
Yeah.
For the Colts, the core of their team is those draft
classes.
And
not just misses. First round misses. I just listed a bunch of players with you, and they were all Colts first round picks.
Yep.
Tyler Warren, Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman.
Taylor
Nelson.
Was a second round pick,
barely
though.
Okay. Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, second round pick. Quentin Nelson. I mean, they hit on a lot of picks. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, you gotta hit on your first round picks. You just do. Everybody misses one once in a while. It happens. But when you miss like three in a row, like some GMs have done in the NFL, it really hamstrings your team. Some people make excuses for those GMs, but, you know, some get fired.
Right. Like, I like to make fun of the Raiders and the Mike Mayock first-round picks because they were all pretty horrible.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, you look at the Titans over that pretty much the same stretch, it's not that much better.
No.
So, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's go back to our phone lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam from Portland is on the line wanting to chat about Brian Callahan. Adam, good morning. Go ahead.
Well, Corey, I was told I could call back and you had a list for me.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to compare him and Wisenhunt?
The list.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, though, dude. Like, I can remember being, because, man, I'm a 99 fan. So, whole way, like, I can remember being depressed seeing him destroy Marcus. I'm like, God, dude, he's so dumb. Like, he's everything he's doing is wrong. He seems like a prick. Like, nobody would want to talk to him.
Yeah. But these are all accurate.
Redeeming quality. But then Brian Callahan, he's nice, but he's everything else. He's the same dude except nice. He's like, he's going to ruin my quarterback. His dad's going to ruin my quarterback. They're lying to us. They're phonies. They don't know how to protect a quarterback, mm-hmm. like, in any manner. Cincinnati, even Peyton, his last year, like, I'm looking back, dude. I'm going to the archives going, this guy's never been able to do it. So you got to give me something here, man. If you tell me this is what you could look at to be hopeful with this coach, I'll drop it for a little bit.
Well,
but I can't. Like, no, right now, I'm on edge with this guy.
You've got every right to be on edge with him at 3-16, but Ken Wisenhunt sat in a chair and told me that Zach Mettenberger could save the franchise. That was a disqualifier, okay? That was a disqualifier.
Yeah.
All right? Ken Wisenhunt had people in the building begging him to protect the quarterback, begging him, and he would not listen to anyone because he knew everything, all right? Now, Brian Callahan has changed some things. If I have a criticism, it's along what he's talking about with those lines. I think they can do more to protect the quarterback. I think they can keep more people in to protect the quarterback, run patterns with fewer receivers. It may not be pretty. It can be done, and I've seen it be done. The other problem they've got, though, is the tight ends that they want to keep in to help block occasionally aren't particularly good at blocking.
Yes.
Good at blocking. Now, I think Brian Callahan is much more flexible than Ken Wisenhunt in what he's willing to do and willing to change. I think Brian Callahan is wildly more liked and respected by his own team. Okay. So that's another thing that I would give hope for. But again, hope isn't a strategy. All right. Eventually the results have to happen. But I still, you can compare the two in the results without question. You can. I also haven't heard Brian Callahan, you know, bang the table for Doriel Green Beckham in the second round, which was a demand that was made under that coaching administration when they had a fifth round grade on him. So, you know, like this, they're different. The results are the same, and this is a results driven business. And so ultimately, you go 3-21, you get fired.
Yep.
All right, and if Brian Callahan is sitting here with five more losses in a row and he's 3-21, the vultures are going to be circling, and rightfully so, because it is a results-driven business. You know, like I've said before, you lost two games you expected to lose, okay? Now you've got what? The Colts? Who's next?
Texans, Cardinals, Raiders, all on the road after that.
Okay, well, look, you got to win. You got to beat some of those teams.
I think you got to win two of these next four.
Well,
to feel like you're moving in the right direction.
I mean, none of those teams are unbeatable.
Right.
You know, the Texans are 0-2. They've lost to two division winners.
Yep.
But their offensive line is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little bit worried of what Will Anderson versus Dan Moore is going to look like.
Yeah, sure. You should. You should. And, you know, when the Titans went to Houston with Zach Mettenberger at quarterback, and they had, gosh, I can't remember the guy's name who was the left tackle that day. Everybody says it was Jeremiah Potassi. It wasn't. He was the right tackle.
Yeah, I know. I know who you're talking about.
The left tackle, they just got him off the street.
Yes.
And they started him, and they gave him no help.
That was when J.J. Watt took the selfie with Zach Mettenberger.
No, that was at Nissan Stadium.
Okay,
that
gotcha.
That was Zach's first start. But so in that game, they refused to give the left tackle help. He was crying in the locker room at halftime, okay? And they still refused to give him help in the second half, all right? And, you know, they got embarrassed, and he got fired, and he should have. It was malpractice. I know the GM went down at halftime and said, "What are you doing?" And he was told to go away. And so, I mean, the guys.
Right.
The level of incompetence was an arrogance was massive.
Right. You can compare the results, but it does seem like the culture around Brian Callahan is in a much better place.
And look, that doesn't matter if you can't win.
No,
and if you're a bad team.
The results have to be there too.
But if you're asking me, you know, what's the difference? There's a difference. And I think flexibility is a big difference in willing to accept to do things differently. But if all the flexibility in the world doesn't matter if you don't get better and you don't win games. All right. And so, you know, he's got to start winning some games. You know, now that he's, I mean, the next four games, I'm not going to say they should beat this team. They should beat this team. But they're not playing the Rams or the Broncos the next 4 weeks.
You can't go 0-4. You've got to show that you can win football games.
Yeah. You got to find a way to win instead of find a way to lose.
Right.
You hope, okay. But this is one of the things we talk about with Cam Ward. Every coach he's had says he's a culture changer.
Yep.
All right. You hope that that starts to kick in. All right. And he starts elevating his team. All right. You know, because I was having this conversation about somebody yesterday, you know, wanting to see the quarterback elevate the team and the quarterback not doing it. I wish I could remember the example that it was. I mean, Diego Pavia is a great example.
Yeah.
I mean, just massively elevating Tennessee. Nico Iamaleava did not elevate Tennessee.
For sure.
And Joey Aguilar is.
Yep.
Joey Aguilar is. He is elevating. He is getting more from that roster than Nico did. And now Nico's gotten another coach fired. All right. And that's not putting everything on the quarterback. What I'm saying is Titans drafted Cam Ward because they were the belief was he was going to help elevate everything. That takes some time. It took Joe Burrow some time. It takes most of them some time. But they need that time to come sooner than later, or Brian Callahan will run out of time.
100%. And you bring up Diego Pavia and Joey Aguilar. That's a perfect transition to where we're going to start in hour number two.
By the way, Terry McCormick just hit me up, and I appreciate it. He's right on the money. It was Will Svitek.
Will Svitek,
picked
yes.
up off the street and left out on an island with J.J. Watt.
Titans legend, Will Svitek.
I'm sorry for Will. I feel badly for him.
Yeah. No, that's a tough situation to be thrown into. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. As I mentioned, we're going to get into Vanderbilt and Tennessee in hour number two. Vandy with the big win on Saturday. Yesterday, some drama around Diego Pavia ended up being much ado about nothing. And we'll also talk a little bit of a comparison between Diego and Joey Aguilar.
There's a lot to compare there.
Right. Both of them have gotten off to strong starts this year. We'll do that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.